Hello, everyone. Welcome to C-Suite Talks. We speak with industry leaders, introducing you to some of the most interesting people and businesses today. We are focused on women, money, and power, as well as diversity in all areas. Welcome to C-Suite Talks. I'm Beth Philbin, co-CEO of C-Suite, along with...
Hi, I'm Diane Gubin, co-CEO of C-Suite, along with Beth. And we are so happy to be speaking today with Teresa Freeborn. And Teresa, she is an executive. She just recently stepped down as CEO of a very large credit union. She's a longtime advocate for women. She is a principal in a clothing company, Smash and Tess, and now she's an author. Teresa is an outspoken and sought-after speaker and media commentator who delivers important truths with warmth, compassion, and humor. So, Teresa, you have a new book called Suits and Skirts, Game is On, and the premise of the book is simple. All right, we have three things. Women have been seeking power and equity for decades to no avail. Men are keeping women from attaining powerful C-suite and board positions to the detriment of corporate, oh, that's holding up the book, to the detriment of corporate bottom lines. And the reasons vary, but the results do not. Women are still highly underrepresented in leadership roles. So welcome, Teresa.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yay. We're so happy to have you, Teresa.
So happy to be here.
Thank you. So let's just dive in because there's a lot of amazing information and questions we have for you today. So why the book and why is it directly to men in corporate leadership roles? And first off, the book is amazing. I read it. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I read it too. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You two are definitely officially in my fan club. Appreciate you. Anyway, as Diane mentioned, you know, women have been seeking power equity for decades, right? To no avail. And I personally have been working on the advancement of women in leadership roles for decades as well. And, you know, quite frankly, to take a phrase from an old movie called Network, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. That's kind of where I'm at right now. And it kind of formed my thesis for the book, which is sort of weaves into your second part of your question. And it is my thesis that it's men who are keeping women from attaining powerful C-suite and board positions, all to the detriment of corporate bottom lines, okay? And the reasons vary. Yes, they do. The results do not. We know what we're looking at today, and I'm going to get into that in a moment. But I think I'm just going to ask you to do some of the math, because you can do the math in all of your organizations, and you'll prove this point. You know, women are very highly underrepresented. And there's so many books out there for women, you know, plenty of conferences and symposiums and networks, and just like C-Suite, right? We encourage each other at these kinds of networks. We share our learnings, but we also lament our current state of representation at senior levels. I mean, that's reality. And this book actually doesn't talk to women, guys. It actually talks directly to men who are blocking women's corporate advancement. And you know what? I haven't read a lot of books like that. I haven't read a lot of books out there that are actually just talking to the men about women's lack of advancement. And it's kind of surprising because we all know that as men, right, that's who's in these positions of power today. They're in the leadership roles. And if you think about it, naturally, they're the only ones that can actually fix the problem, right? They have the power, right? And to make these points very clearly in this book, it sort of resulted in this no-holds-barred discussion, which is probably going to ruffle some feathers as the men read this. They're going to make themselves a little more uncomfortable as they read it. And I've got to tell you, there's real good reasons to ground this. And most of it comes with about, you know, sort of the representation of women. If you think of an increase in the Fortune 500 of 40 female CEOs in the course of 50 years. If you think that's a success, then I think I question your math skills, okay? Think about it. One female CEO in 1971 to 44 female CEOs in 2022. That's 50 years. That's not an improvement, guys. That is ridiculous.
It's token.
Pathetic. And it's actually pretty shit, right? And let's talk about women.
Barely.
It's ridiculous. And you know, women on boards, I keep reading the same number these days, and I don't care how you look at it or how you want to spin it, but you know, women make up only 25% of boards out there, right? We're never going to see major change if that number stays there like that. And it's been there for a while. And there are a whole bunch of boards which actually don't have any women on them at all. And then there's a whole bunch that actually have one or two. And quite frankly, they think that's plenty. So we've got so much to work with here, and I'm just about sort of putting some of these hard facts out there and getting a conversation going and starting to change the mindset. So that's why I did it. And as you can tell, I'm feeling pretty strong about those opinions. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, as a former bank CEO, being in finance, you saw it for sure. So, so why do you think women are being frozen out of these C-suites and corporate boards? You're saying it's the men. So are you anti-male? Like, tell us.
I've had that response. Actually, I think it was my son who first said that when he read a very early draft and he said, "Mom, you just sound like you're a man hater in this."
I didn't find that at all, actually.
Not at all is my response. Not at all is my response because, you know, we need men on our side to make the change. As I mentioned earlier, they have the power, they have the control. So who do you think is going to make those strategies, you know, get put in place and measure to them and all of that? It's going to be the men. So it's not about anti-male. The book is probably going to come across as anti-male, but really, let's just say that in terms of leadership, I'm actually just pro-female, not anti-male. How about that? Maybe that's a good way
to be. Well, actually, you said it. You're a mom. You're almost like calling these men out. It's like, this is bad behavior, and we've got to stop it. That's really
totally
what you're saying.
Totally. And you know, at the end of the day, if there's something that we can all take away is try to imagine what the world would look like, right? If women held their proportionate share of leadership. Like, how about 50-50, right? Let's draw it on the lines of population just for the heck of it. Think of what the agenda would be. And on corporate board tables, think of what the agenda would be in government, healthcare, education. I mean, I don't even know where to stop here, but I'm going to tell you, it would be very different.
Pink tax, it goes on and on.
It would.
It would.
The strategies would be different. And of course, the results would be different. We'd live in a very different world today. So, you know, although these views are perhaps viewed as anti-male, it's actually just my way of sort of doing a disruptive approach to the problem, right? Meant to get men's attention. So I'm hoping it will. So that's my response to anti-male. Yeah.
But what are some of, there are so many myths about women in the workplace that are just ingrained into our society. What are some of those you call those out?
First of all, myths. Yes, there are tons of them and they're very persistent over the years, if you think about it. And these are about the myths that men have about women, okay? I'm just assuming that women don't hold the same kind of myths. They just experience them, right? So there's I guess there's some pretty messed up, fossilized ideas about women in the workforce that do need to be addressed. And they need to be addressed yesterday. So this is really old, you know, old thinking. But I can give you a few, but there are so many. And I'd love the two of you to even comment on what you think these myths are. But I'm going to tell you. Things like, you know, we can't control our emotions, really. Women prioritize family over work responsibilities, really. Pregnant women can't possibly be effective at work. How about the fact that women are too risk averse, right? You hear that all the time. Oh no, they can't be good leaders because they're risk averse. And yet, you know, women aren't as educated. I hear that one too. And I think that's just absolutely blatantly wrong. I mean, women are coming out of school at far greater rates than men are in every faculty. So that's just doesn't hold water anymore. You know, there's plenty others, but speaking softly, apparently that is a real sign of weakness because we don't yell or scream or, you know, throw tantrums. Apparently that's a weakness. So those are the kinds of myths that still exist after all these years. Hard to believe.
So one of the things that I came across, which I thought was interesting, and you just said it earlier in this session, is if more women were in leadership roles, profits for companies would be higher. So can you go through that a little bit and what your logic is with that?
Yes. Do you know, it's interesting because this is the one thing that I think that men just aren't accepting as a fact. And it's been written over and over. Countless reports, countless academic papers. It all seems to be falling on deaf ears, but it's an absolute proven fact. Leaving women out of senior positions, well, guess what? It puts your company at a significant disadvantage. And this is in terms of growth and in terms of bottom lines. So it's official. If you put women on boards and in C-suites, you're going to boost your business. It's really that simple.
You make more money.
Very good point, Megan, because what happens if your company makes more money? Everybody makes more money, right? Isn't that what compensation systems are based on? But it's proven. They outperform companies. Diverse boards, diverse C-suites, they outperform anyone else out there by 15%. That's pretty significant.
It's
Yeah.
It's huge. Let's go into some of the ways men sabotage women in the workplace, because we've all experienced it as women, and let's call it out there. And you had great examples of the book, you know, being on the golf course and guys talking sports, and
oh my goodness,
maybe women aren't comfortable with that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. First, let me just start by saying that men seem to be very oblivious and indifferent, or worse, they're sometimes very obstructive, right, to any matters relating to the advancement of women. So this is the first thing you've got to remember, is I don't think it's necessarily always intentional. It's just what they're used to. So I'm kind of calling out a lot of those things in the books, and I certainly can't get into the whole thing here. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, probably the biggest roadblock is men's lack of advocacy for women. They don't stop and go, I need to be mindful about championing more women into my C-suite and onto my board because it's good for the company. They got to change that mindset. So I think that the kinds of ways they sabotage would be, some good examples would be, you know, clinging to that old, you know, work/family narrative, and, you know, what corporations feel about maternity leave. You hear them talk about this. It's not in your policies. Your policies all sound terrific, but it's that talk in the coffee room about it. Oh my God, she's pregnant. Well, forget that promotion for her. That's never going to happen now because she's going to have a baby and that's it. Like, as if we can't do both. Okay. So this is kind of what I'm calling out is, guys, wait a second.
Right. I had a boss who made me, I have three kids, and made me take my leave much earlier than I expected. And I was commission driven and stop everything because he was afraid I was going to give birth in the office.
Oh my God. We have to deal with that mess.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, I am not kidding you. Yeah. I am not kidding you.
Well, there's all of that. And I think at the end of the day, come on, women can be amazing leaders and have children at the same time. Shocker.
Yes.
But we can, and we've proven it over and over and over again. The other part too is the network thing. You mentioned that earlier, Diane. And to me, that is something, again, not necessarily intentional. It's just familiar. So for instance, you know, women aren't allowed to take part in or be part of men's networks. They're men's networks, right? So this idea of the old boys club, it's definitely real. And, you know, there's the boys' nights out. There's the golf outings. There's the drinks after work. You know, what do women do after work? You know, what are we doing? We're rushing home. We got dinner. We got kids. We got homework. We got baths. We got, you know what the lineup is. You're just rushing out the door. Whereas the guys are going to go for a cocktail. Well, guess what gets discussed in those cocktail hours? And they talk about what's coming up in work, the openings that are coming. I heard Joe's, you know, retiring.
Or the bonus, or the pay structures, or the...
Or the financing, or...
Yes. Yeah. Right. The subjects that you wouldn't normally talk about all day at work because you're busy working and doing your job, but these are the things that come up. So it's the opportunity for guys, because women aren't at those networks, to have a sort of a leg up on all those opportunities, which we don't have. So those kinds of things. And then there's also the, you know, if you think of all the behavioral aspects, the, you know, the microaggressions, the, you know, calling women aggressive. Funny how that works. I use an example all the time. I was a big fan of watching House of Cards. I don't know if any of you watched that in the past, but you know, there's your power couple, and they were both just as aggressive and just as ruthless, except she was a bitch, right?
Right.
You know, he on the other hand was, you know, it was just part of who he was and all of that, but they could act the same way. But funny how one gets labeled and one doesn't. So, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's what about the feminine discount? I mean, talk about a sabotage, you know. That's my view. You hire a woman, you get a better deal, right? You get a better price. And I've had so many women tell me this, that, you know, I'm cheaper than the guy. That's why I got the promotion. Think about that. It's very sad. Very sad.
I've been told directly in one corporation I worked at that I got the position because of the diversity goal. So, you know, and I worked
the only
crazy,
reason.
But that was the only reason. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But they see, that's one of those microaggressions. What a horrible thing to tell you.
Right.
Instead of saying you are so confident, you got this job because of what you bring to the table, and boy, you're going to make a difference. You know, that's the stuff that beats women up in the workplace. And that kind of behavior has to stop. It has to stop. If you want to think those things, keep them to yourself, but do not be talking like that. And do not refer to women in that way. It's demoralizing. It really is.
So let me ask you this. So what can they do to change? How do they recognize, and what are some steps in a way that would move them forward?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good question. And I think when men read this, and even women that read it, they're going to say, so how do we make the change? That's probably the most difficult thing. We all kind of know it. Some of us know it better than others, but you know, what do you have to do? And I think it's got to be absolutely creating this top of mind awareness for the problem that exists. So first of all, is can we acknowledge the problem? Men, please acknowledge the problem. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm telling you, every time I'm with a group of men, I usually talk about, so tell me about the makeup of your exec team and your board. And it's always the same response. It's very rare that it comes across as, oh God, we got 65% women on our board. You never hear that. And so, but they look at me and they go, yeah, we got two women. Yeah, we got one heads up HR and one heads up marketing. There you go. Aren't we diverse? And
I see it constantly. It's all over the web. Everybody's corporate website, when you look at who the players are, it's all the guys.
It's so true.
Because there are no qualified women.
That's the point.
Right?
Well, that's the whole other thing. So again, I spent some time talking about the recruitment practices because everybody says, well, you know, we can't have affirmative action. So what happens is these recruiters are retained and you go out and get me a diverse candidate pool. Don't you hear that all the time? Yeah, right. Go get me that diverse candidate pool.
Yeah.
Then you talk to the hiring manager who pretty much always is a guy. And what does he say? Yeah, I've asked for this diverse candidate pool, but I'm going to tell you, Teresa, I'm still going to make the decision based on who's the best candidate. So what does that tell you? That means that he's just totally checked out of the idea that I'm putting forward here, which is, can you be more mindful? There's an imbalance in your corporation. And until you get at 50% of your leadership team as female, some gender balance there like that, then you've got work to do. And if it means that guys may have to be sidelined a little bit, so be it. You know what? Women have been sidelined for years, decades, you know, so what's the big deal? So it's about owning this. And then of course, if you don't have the CEO all completely hepped up on this subject, it ain't ever going to happen anyway, because they got to shout it from the rooftops, right? If they don't believe it and their board doesn't believe it, then it'll fall on deaf ears. I mean, wasn't it, didn't we all just read a story about, you know, when Sheryl Sandberg left the company, you know, what happens if there's a champion in place because you found some capable woman to head this little initiative up, like it's some initiative. No, it's a wholesale change. But if you put someone in place and they leave, that's it for the program. You know, I mean, this is probably the biggest flaw with DEI programs today is we don't have that constant awareness, constant top of mind. Everything you do in your business, think of it through the lens of how do I get this balance? Because it's good for my company. I got to get to this balance,
right?
You know, driven in that.
Right. Because the DE&I people are mostly female,
right?
I've been noticing. So then they've got that whole battle of right against the problem and trying to move the guys out when they don't want to go. So really what you're saying is that men don't even think there's
a problem. That's the biggest thing. And I call that out immediately because that's what I've experienced my entire life, you know. And here we have this book, right, that's going to speak to men. Well, first of all, how are we going to get men to read it is my real question, right? The women have been buying it like crazy, which I'm so delighted. But here's the thing, you know, I think that I have something for women and I have something for men in this book. And it was unintentional. I was writing it for men. But you know what women have told me? They've told me that, look, I know it's directed at men. I can feel it. And I love that it is. However, you kind of gave me a playbook here. You kind of gave me some ideas on how to respond to some of this, you know, absolute terrible treatment I get in my workplace. And it exists today. You think it was the 50s? No, this is 2022. And this is what I'm feeling. So there's that. And also I think it gives women a voice. They feel stronger when they read that others are experiencing the same things. And now I'm going to bring it out and I'm going to talk about it some more. So that's for women. But at the end of the day, what I really want to do is how do I get to the guys? And I think that it had to be a disruptive kind of view of the world. If it was just some woman's book and expecting the men to read it, they're never going to read it. So it had to be kind of cheeky and sassy and kind of no holds barred, which is what I wanted to do. And just first of all,
and black, the cover choice you made as opposed to pink.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, that was intentional too. Good.
So Teresa, I want to ask you about women. So I have observed a couple things. So women, number one, let their networks down. They don't continue networking things. Diana and I've heard a lot like, oh, I'm so busy. I don't have time to go to events. I don't have time.
I've heard it forever.
I can't invest in networking organizations, etc. And men realize the power of their network. That's why they golf. That's why they go for drinks. That's why. And I have seen it when a woman loses their position or does a career transition, they have to scramble. When a man does, someone picks them up and moves them, you know, to somewhere else. So
right.
Why do you think women do that to themselves? It's like self-sabotaging their environment. Not all women, and we're generalizing, so I apologize.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I belong to several networks, all pretty much women networks. Men have their own thing, and they're not going to, you probably don't even know of those networks. I mean, they just don't exist. But my feeling is that women's networks don't really work all that well if you think about it. So I'll just preface that with something here, because this is a network. C-Suite is a network. You can get as much out of it as you want to get out of it, right? So I've joined a local group. I try and plug in wherever I can. Yes, I'm busy. I've got about 8 things going at the same time, but I still find time for, come on, 45 minutes? You can do it. Everybody can do that. So I think women should pay a little more attention to that. But at the end of the day, the power is in the men's networks, right? So, and here's my reason for that. No man wants to join a woman's network. There's a reason for that. There's no power there. They join their networks. They become part of that because they can see someone who's more powerful than they are that can help them and give them a leg up down the road. So that is the quandary here. We'll never have men in our networks. And quite frankly, I don't think we need to. I think that women need to figure out how we can get more involved in some of the men networks. There's only one way that that can happen. And that would be for the male leaders today to allow that to happen. Okay. To actually allow women into some of those networks. Intentionally, not because they forgot about it, not because they never thought about it, not because, oh, we asked, but you know, they got to run, they got to get home at night or whatever. Well, then make it on a different time. Okay. How about making it at 4:00? Cut out a little early so that they can also participate and still get home in time. Like it's about sort of, you know, reframing all of that and reinventing what that network looks like. It's old school. It's absolutely old school, you know?
Right. But also within the men's networks, and I can think of several business networkers just locally here that are heavily male, it's the men opening up the circles. Like in C-Suite, we just pull women in. Teresa, no woman ever stands alone. We pull you in. We make sure you're talking, you're meeting the right people. Who do you want to know? When you walk into the men's network, you don't get that warm fuzzy. You get the closed cliques, you get the circles, and you're like, who do I need to talk to? And then the women find each other because you can't open up the men's networks.
Oh my goodness. You just reminded me of my entire career in finance where there's so few women at the table in a senior circle that it wasn't uncommon for me to walk into any conference and being one of 6 women in the room of 300. And then talk about a lonely place. I mean, you gradually sort of move to other women in the room, and then you realize, no, I got to go sit at that guy's table. I'll just go and shake that up a little.
Right. Right. But let me even add to that. Being in finance, almost every single phone call is male. The women are not working together. Yeah. And I see it. They're not opening the doors. It's strange.
Did you see that too, that women, like if there's a woman that is on a corporate board, is she proposing and putting up other women to be on that board too? Or do they feel, I'm here, I need to protect what I have?
You know, I think we can all find examples of the latter that you just spoke of, that I'm in, nobody else coming in. You know, I got into the neighborhood, no one else is coming in, right? I want to keep it to myself. I don't want to risk losing it. There's that kind of spirit out there, like they're good and bad everywhere. But I think what I've seen mostly is women helping women, lifting women up. And I think Madeleine Albright had a great quote, which was sort of, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women.
I remember that.
And I totally believe that, right? It's like, ladies, let's help each other up here. And until we have that parity, it's going to take some heavy lifting here. It is. And we need all of hands on deck. And you're still going to find the bad apples. They're going to exist. You know, it's like you can find some absolutely aggressive, ball-busting woman CEO out there too. But I think by and large, they're not. They use their women, female attributes. That's what they bring to the leadership table. It's not that. So you're going to see those rarities. But I'm sort of bullish on most women, like us here, are those kind of women that have that kind of balance. We're not going to go off in some tangent here and protect turf and all that stuff. No, I think we're going to help other women.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, do it.
I think so too. So before we end and talk about where we're buying the book, let's talk very briefly about Smash and Test, which is also the company you're a principal in. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that and how you're doing and what your plans are.
Yeah, thank you for asking. And Smash and Test, so my daughter would be the Smash and I would be the Test. Test is short for Teresa. And it's a women's apparel company that is a direct-to-consumer, so we're online only, called smashtest.com. She is the CEO, so I'm very proud of her. And by the way, she wrote the foreword to my book, which has never happened. I've never seen a foreword written by a daughter, so I was very proud of that. She did an amazing job of that. And I'm chair of the board of Smash and Test, and we're sort of this women-owned, women-run company. We're based in Vancouver, Canada, but we have about 10% of our market now in the U.S., and we're expanding that. We have a hero piece. It's the romper. The romper. It's like a onesie. If you haven't got one, you got to go get one. It's basically, you know, it's to help women feel super comfortable. You know, women are changing the world kind of thing, and we need clothes that can change with them, that kind of brand play there. And we have community-led design. We have 350,000 Instagram followers, and these people help us design our product. It's just amazing. It's an amazing experience. You have to be involved.
Right, and you've got some very big names affiliated with it, Paula Abdul and others. I mean, you've done amazing.
Oh, we do. We've managed to get a lot of collaborations going with, most recently, we just had a collab with Paula Abdul. We've got Ashley Simpson coming up, but we've done one with Hilary Duff, Gillian Harris, Star Wars, Sesame Street, you name it. So, you know, everybody's got their little angle there, and it's really fun. And, but again, every one of those collaborations mean that these people get to help design what it is that we're going to put out there. So give us a shot. Take a look, see what you like there.
Oh, that's great. Okay, cool. So where can folks buy the book?
It is available on Amazon for sure. And I know because all sorts of friends of mine, it was just released on Tuesday, and all sorts of friends are sending me pictures of them holding the book. And it arrived today. So it just took a couple of days. So it's in everybody's hands now, but it's certainly available there. And it's available in Kindle and soft cover and hardcover. And so you can certainly buy it at Amazon. You can also buy it at Barnes & Noble and other booksellers too. They've got it as well. But have at it.
Okay, cool.
Terrific. Well, thank you. Okay, so thank you, Teresa Freeborn, executive, co-CEO, principal of Smash and Test. The book again is Suits and Skirts, Game On. Thank you to our sponsors, Google, City National Bank, the law firm of Minette, the law firm of Paul Hastings, Interpublic Group, advertising media and PR companies, and executive search and IT consulting firm, Amplify Professional Services. Thank you so much to our listeners. We appreciate you. Beth, take us home.
Yep, and hit the subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. Leave us a review. We're on social media, streaming live on LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. And love hearing from you. So please check out our website, www.csweet.org, and come and get involved. And thank you so much, Teresa, for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye.